to the Crooked Forest podcast. I'm your host, Holly Noonan, and we will be discussing affordable housing for sensitive people and all aspects of paradigm-changing trends in natural building and how it relates to your health, like living in neighborhoods that are designed specifically for the microbiome. We'll also explore creative solutions for affordable home ownership, like community land trusts and cooperatives, and delve into permaculture and regenerative systems design. If that's what you're interested in, you're in the right place, and we're glad you're here. So let's dive right in. Today's recording is actually an interview of me done by Kristen Lundgren and her radio show called Interconnect. It was broadcast in June on gmcr.org or Gila Membres Community Radio. Let's have a listen.
You're listening to Gila Membres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, or online at gmcr.org. This is Interconnect, an exploratory broadcast that aims to weave respectful, ecologically grounded, community-focused, and ancestral communications into the airwaves so we can be better prepared to grow a regenerative, abundant, and interconnected way of living in our modern world. Interconnect is part of the Kidron Continuum broadcast series, which airs each Monday at 10 a.m. and Sunday at 4 p.m. Interconnect typically airs the first Monday and the following Sunday. I'm Kristen Lundgren, so grateful to have access to these radio waves. Thank you for tuning in. I find it important to acknowledge that I am a white woman of Swedish and Irish descent, living on the land of many Indigenous people before me, most recently the Chiricahua Apache. I know that my privilege as a white woman has landed me in this place where its original inhabitants were forcibly removed. May we heal our world, and may reparations be made for the wounds our colonization has caused. May we walk here humbly and learn to move in a way that is deeply respectful to the land we live on, especially if our blood and ancestral cultures are not Indigenous where we live. Hey everyone, happy Monday morning. I'm here with Holly Noonan of the Crooked Forest Institute, which is a newly forming nonprofit here in Grant County that's devoted to natural building and creating safe environments for folks who need safe environments for sensitivities. Yeah, for environmental sensitivity. Yeah. So, Holly, would you just introduce the Crooked Forest Institute better than I just did?
So, Crooked Forest Institute is about affordable housing for sensitive people. In the course of creating this organization, I've really learned that I need to broaden the definition of what constitutes sensitivities. Originally, it was only environmental sensitivities, and the nutshell version is that people who have environmental sensitivities, like myself and a lot of my friends, actually need to live in masonry houses as a way to stabilize and heal. And that you can get sick in a way that makes it very difficult to regain your health if you're living in a conventionally built house with 2x4s and drywall and paint. But I've come to realize that there are a lot of people who are sensitive in other ways, emotionally sensitive, aesthetically sensitive, also sensory, overwhelmed. People who are on the spectrum find it really important to live in calming, grounded scenarios. And I live in a brick house here in Silver City, and I get lots of different reactions from lots of different sorts of people. And, you know, there's quite a segment of the population that finds it challenging to just simply live in modern times. And there are quite a few people that need to create a refuge to go home to in order to simply recover from being in modern life. Mm.
So will you tell us a little bit, Holly, about your story and your history and how you came to realize that you needed a building for your sensitivities, just all that you've gone through?
You bet. So it actually goes back about 20 years. It was 2003 when I went to Australia with my Australian husband, And I got bit by something and I got sick with something and it was not identifiable. It took me 7 years to figure out that it was a rickettsia, which is a tick-borne illness, sort of like Lyme disease. It's not a spirochete. But, and that sort of destabilized my health in a way that took me a long time to understand. But what ended up happening was I lived in Maine for 17 years and I started to get sick in a way that was really unexplainable. And I tried everything to get better, all these lifestyle interventions. I thought I was going to heal myself through food. I went to nutrition school and I started just engaging in all kinds of alternative therapies. And they all sort of had an impact. And I made little gains here and there. But basically in 2015, I got really, really sick and I became bedridden. And so my son was 11 years old at the time. I got what could have been described as a cold or a flu. But 4 months later, I was still in bed and I lost my job. Then I lost my, I realized that actually what was happening was an extreme immune dysregulation because I had moved into my boyfriend's moldy house. And so once I realized that, I got out of that house. But the immune dysregulation ended up kicking off something that was a Pandora's box that was just impossible to close again. I just tried and tried to fix it, tried not to leave Maine. I did not want to leave Maine. I did not want to leave my son. But I lost my job. I lost my boyfriend. I lost my house. I just lost all of my identities. They collapsed in just a smoldering heap all at once. And I ended up getting a new car and all new belongings and just hitting the road for my life. Because there was just no healing in Maine. I couldn't go inside buildings. And it was October 15th, 2016. I was sleeping outside and I woke up covered in frost. And I thought, oh my God, I gotta go. So I ended up driving around the country for 3 months while I was sick. And I was just looking for a place that would not make me worse. And I couldn't find it. I was just reacting to everywhere. I was just reacting to human civilization itself. So I went camping, but sometimes I was even reacting to that. And so one day I was actually scared to go up into the Gila because I knew my phone wouldn't work. And I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody in New Mexico when I moved here. I didn't know anybody up in Springs the day that I drove up there, but that day changed my life because it was the first time I had ever experienced air that was so clean. My body calmed down. And so I went camping for a whole year. And at that point, I was so sick that I couldn't even sleep in my car. I had to, because I drove it to town every week to get food and it got contaminated and I had to deep clean it. And basically, I had to sleep in a hammock for that year. I had to hand wash my belongings, including my bedding, every other day. Because you go through something called intensification when your immune system gets activated in that way. And that means that when you get away from the thing that has been poisoning you, it starts to dump out of your tissues. You go through this detox process where you're reacting to your own damn self. And it's, you can't get away from it. It's so confusing and it drives people crazy. But a lot of people here in this place have met people who have gotten sensitive in this way and can't be inside buildings. You know, I did a presentation a few weeks ago and I just asked for a raise of hands for how many people here have met someone or know someone who got sick in a way where they couldn't be inside buildings. And almost everybody's hand in the room went up. It's becoming more common.
Yeah. Really, truly, I sense that those of you who are having those experiences are canaries in the coal mine for all of us, recognizing that these environments that we live in are not really actually healthful. You know, the buildings with all the paint, like you mentioned, the paint, the drywall, the 2x4s, the mold that's formed from just the way that moisture holds in those spaces. And so I really, you know, it's kind of a weird thing to say, but like, I'm grateful that you're showing us, you know, that these environments aren't healthy and aren't sustainable.
Thank you. I really appreciate that because that is definitely part of why I do this. I hold gatherings in this space that I've created because people need to know about this. The average American umbilical cord blood has more than 200 chemicals in it. So this, it's very unlikely that whatever health issues you are experiencing, that they are not informed on some level by the ubiquity of these chemicals. And it's not just chemicals. It's actually the microbial world is responding to the chemicals. There are 84,000 chemicals that are new in our environment in my father's lifetime. He was born in 1942. So since World War II, these chemicals have been unleashed. It's really very profound here in this country. That's the reason I couldn't find any place that was clean enough for me to recover after driving around the country for 3 months. It's because everywhere is polluted.
So I know that in the last, gosh, I get, when did you, so we're actually sitting right now in Holly's space, her masonry house. And I know that over the last couple of years, I've seen kind of the progress of this becoming your home, Holly. And I would love to just have you share the story of realizing that you could acquire this place and what you've done with this space.
So when I lived in Maine, my boyfriend was a builder and I had a building project myself. I had a, I bought a fixer-upper cape when I got divorced when my son was five and made it into a two unit and then a three unit. So I really liked building projects. And this three unit was what I was living on when I got became disabled and had to wander around the country. That so I couldn't sell it and I also couldn't live in it. So I was kind of stuck in a way. In 2019, I went back to see if I could, you know, just try again. Can I move back to Maine? Like, is this possible? Can I live in my own house? It was my retirement setup. It was a great little, it was a beautiful little house, you know, but I couldn't. So I decided to put it on the market and I had a buyer within 24 hours. My little three unit was 1 mile away from the ocean in Camden, Maine. And, I, within a month, had found this property that was just a weird abandoned project that was a brick garage next to a foundation for a 2,000 square foot house that never got built. So now it's a garage next to a big hole in the ground. And I thought, that's a masonry house. Nobody's ever lived in it. It was 6 years old. Nobody'd ever used it. So I bought it and I made it into a house. And my boyfriend, who was the builder, came out for a couple of months and helped me put up the walls and run the plumbing and design the whole thing. So the walls in this house are not wood. They are steel 2x4s covered in concrete board and then two layers of plaster. And the top layer is a mineral pigment. So there's no adhesives, there's no paint, there's no chemicals whatsoever. The floors are stained with a soy-based non-toxic stain that didn't outgas at all. The ceiling is metal. It's roofing metal. And so this is a very inert, neutral space. And so what we're doing when we're living in houses, we don't think about it, but we are we are collaborating with a microbial ecosystem. We are nested into an ecosystem of microbes that we have relationships with. We don't think about it, but that is actually what's happening. These microbes are on the surfaces of your walls and all your furniture and on your body and your skin and in your sinuses. And and sometimes those microbial ecosystems get out of balance and they can cause inflammatory challenges. And so what I've created here is a house that is the least likely to have those kinds of inflammatory challenges. So even if this house flooded, which I hope it never does, there would be no place for mold to grow on the walls or anything. There is a little bit of wood in here, but it's only the doors and two tables, three tables. The rule for wood in a space like this is has to have air on all sides. It cannot be hidden. And it can't have condensation or water touching it. So my kitchen sink is a steel sink that's nested into a steel table. My my shelving is steel. My everything is steel furniture.
And how, I mean, I guess, my curiosity comes with how long did it take with you being in this space and not being, I guess my question is about your journey into wellness. Yeah. Into feeling more well in your body.
It's a really good question. So it took me a long time to figure out the layers of malfunction. And this is one of the reasons that people get so stuck by complex chronic illness, where it's an immune system activation. I became a Bredesen protocol health coach, which is it's a functional medicine protocol to reverse cognitive decline. That involves mold and chemical avoidance, which is a very technical process that I had been living when I found out about it. So I became a Bredesen Protocol health coach in 2018 and supported other people to start understanding the mechanism of action of their own biological dysfunction. As an example, I have something called mast cell activation syndrome, mast cells are a white blood cell. They are a granulocyte. And when they degranulate as an inflammatory response to your environment, they release up to 100 cytokines, which can feel like pain and inflammation. So that gives you an immediate response to your environment. You know when you're around something that is inflammatory and hurts. It actually... Like when I have an event like this, you know, every cell in my body is telling me to leave, 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 leave. But not everybody who develops complex chronic illness has that as the mechanism of action. So one of my very dearest friends from back east also develops, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome that was based in complex chronic illness, immune dysregulation that started out as Lyme disease. But she doesn't have mast cell activation as a factor. It's much more mitochondrial in her case. So she has to really become aware of what nourishes and protects her mitochondria, which are the source of your energy. They create ATP that gives your body the energy to move and live. And what is damaging to mitochondria. So she has to be very, very astute about her environment in that way, but she doesn't get immediate feedback like I get because of the mast cell. So she has a delayed reaction. It's a puzzle. Everybody's got to figure it out. But in my journey, I was on and off homeless for 6 years. This health issue was so overwhelming, it was so dysregulating that I could not invest in anything. And I did not know when I was working on this building, which I now call the Taj Garage, if I could live here. I had no idea. But I figured that I would go forward because even if I couldn't live here, I wouldn't lose money on it because it was a building project. And, you know, I did this building project. It took me 2.5 years and 8 of my friends to help me finish it to the point where it was done and livable. It's got one bedroom and it's about 1,000, maybe 1,100 square feet. It's great for parties. the process of finishing it was exhausting, but the fact that I finished this building while I was sick makes me feel extremely powerful. Mm-hmm. Like I can do anything.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I need to do more. We need to do more. Like as it's happening right now, it was about a year ago. It was April 1st, 2022 that I finished it and didn't have to do anything more. Mm-hmm. And for the first couple of months, I had been in survival mode for 6+ years and just constantly trying to figure out, where am I going to do my laundry? Where am I going to get online? Where am I going to get my mail? Where am I going to sleep? Mm-hmm. I've slept in 12 to 15 different locations on this property. I had to sleep outside for 6 years. Mm-hmm. I finally got to the point where it was quiet. I was I was disoriented by the quiet. You can tell how quiet it is in here. Everything calmed down. And I realized how powerful it was just to have a safe, quiet masonry house. You know, especially when it got really hot outside. You know, I'd done several summers where I was camping in June, brutal. And then monsoon, oh my God, it's so intense. To have a brick house that's not going to blow over and nobody can kick me out and it's safe. Mm-hmm. And I get to cultivate my own environment. It was like a 2-month sigh of relief. Mm.
And then from that sigh of relief came the Crooked Forest Institute.
That's right. Yeah. It really was it was a process of post-traumatic growth.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. An expression of now I understand how this works. Now I understand how many people, and we're talking tens of thousands of people, need the dignity and the safety of a small masonry house. And, you know, I just happened to relocate to this place in the desert where there's a significant number of adobes that are old in this town. And they're still around. They're amazing buildings. They've been handed down through the generations to the people who live in them now. And that kind of stability, you know, is really a paying forward of these ancestors to the current generation. This is the seventh generation frame of mind in action that people are still living in these houses.
So you're listening to KURU 89.1, and this is Interconnect. I'm Kristen Lundgren, and I'm here with Holly Noonan. We've been talking about environmental sensitivities and how Holly's experience with her environmental sensitivity has led her to creating the Crooked Forest Institute, which I'm just going to ask you to give us a little bit more information about what the goals of the Crooked Forest Institute are and your strategies. But I know that one of the main goals is really that we can create earthen homes that are safe havens for those who are chemically and mold sensitive and other sensitivities too.
And other sensitivities. And doing that affordably. That's really like the main goal is how do we create the most affordable adobe. That's really it. It's a complex vision, but the main thrust of the vision is affordable adobes. And that, here's our strategy. Our plan is to start small, of course. We just incorporated September 6, 2022. We just participated in Give Grandly in May, and that was really cool. What a wonderful way to introduce ourselves to the community. I'll tell you about the board in a minute, but the way that we're conceiving of arriving at this vision is we're really taking a page out of the book of organizations that are already killing it. They're really doing it well already. We're not going to reinvent the wheel here. We're going to look for people who are really doing it well already and then see if we can adapt their successful program to what we're going to do. So one of the things that we have concluded is a key to affordable adobes is compressed earth blocks. So one of the biggest obstacles for adobes is that they are so labor intensive. And, you know, maybe that didn't used to be that big of an issue, but our economy is set up in such a way that people are in debt, you know, and they really need to assign their time to earning money. And the people in our society who are not assigned that as a role, moneymakers, they need to support their families in other ways. There's lots of ways that our economy does not allow for people to take off a significant amount of time and build their own house. Right. So if we can take out part of the labor of actually making the adobe bricks, adobe bricks that are handmade in forms are ideal. It's amazing if you can afford to buy those or have the time to make those. But a good alternative to that is compressed earth blocks, which can be machine made. Essentially, if you get the right mixture of earth and you can stabilize it. Lisa Morey from Colorado Earth has gotten this mixture down to stabilizing with 4% lime. So traditionally a lot of compressed earth block manufacturers, they stabilize with 7% Portland. But the use of cement is, you know, if you are trying to do any kind of sustainable or regenerative enterprise, you know, seeing what you can do to avoid cement is always a good plan. And Lisa Morey, who's an architectural engineer, and, you know, take a look at her website, coloradoearth.com is amazing. Her brochures, her everything she does is amazing. I really trust her in terms of creating bricks that, you know, these things will last hundreds of years. It's a really different way of interacting with your environment compared to the affordable housing that is typical in this country and in this town right now, which is manufactured housing that is designed to last no more than 25 years. And that when people live in housing like that longer than 25 years or even shorter, they get sick. You know, these houses are built of particle board and they're not exactly watertight or weathertight. And when there's a leak, from interior plumbing or roof or windows that goes unnoticed. You know, the microbial ecosystem that can develop with not very much time can be quite dangerous. Mm-hmm. And it's really important that people know that. So we are planning on compressed earth blocks, manufacturing them as a way of making the actual production unit more affordable. And we have a number of different ways we're planning on doing that. You can have a manual block press or you can have automated block presses. There's a company in Texas called AECT that makes compressed earth block manufacturing machines. They're diesel powered. We want to get our hands on a couple of these. There are a couple of them locally that are used and in good shape. Mm. And my dream would be to make them run on French fry oil because I can't be around the diesel. Mm. But yeah, if you get the right yard set up, and we have some really good role model people and organizations who can help us with that setup, you can produce up to 800 blocks an hour. And if you're looking at a 200 square foot tiny house, and this is a whole other conversation because those are not legal mm-hmm. to build, even though that's what we need, that's 1,500 blocks. Mm-hmm. And you could produce enough for a house in 2 hours.
Wow.
So you can see how it can become affordable.
Yeah, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
That's with two machines, not one.
And so my understanding was that the compressed earth blocks are... they're functioning in two main ways. Like one is as the resource for the building material, mm-hmm. but also as a subsidiary of the nonprofit.
That's right.
To be able to have like an income stream that's supporting right. the function of the nonprofit.
That's right. We had an attorney who is very familiar with economic development models suggest that we consider having the compressed earth block be a for-profit subsidiary of the nonprofit. And I think that's a great idea. So we're going to move forward with that as a concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then let's talk too about it being an institute.
Mm-hmm.
So from that place where the initial starting point is figuring out how to get the resources to begin to make compressed earth blocks. Mm-hmm. And then what's next?
Well, our next plan, or the next step after the compressed earth block manufacturing operation, we envision that, you know, we're looking at land, we're looking at potential locations for the compressed earth block, but that's not a location that we would own. We would be renting or leasing to start that up. But we are looking at a 10-acre plot of land. We haven't identified exactly where it is, but this is in the next year.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping to identify a 10-acre plot and buy it, and then start building our educational campus. And what this campus is it basically represents the prototype neighborhood that we have designed. So the neighborhood is 10 homes and then a couple of communal buildings, actually three. One is a kitchen dining room, one is a bathroom laundry shower, and then the third one is a shop. Hmm. And the compressed earth block factory will be also located eventually on the location that we own. So the 10 small homes would be essentially our education process. We're going to be teaching people how to build these designs. And we're really aiming at another element of what will make these affordable is taking the labor out of the unit, also creating small designs. These houses are going to be somewhere between 2 and I think probably the biggest possible one would be 800 square feet. Mm-hmm. But we're really going to be looking at 2 or 3 designs that we do over and over and over and perfect them. Mm-hmm. So, affordable unit of production, also efficiency in the systems design, and then a smaller footprint. These are the three elements of how we're going to make these houses affordable. So the campus will be, our education campus will be, basically modeling how we teach Adobe construction with these specific designs, the designs by Joseph Kennedy, who's Earth Architect and author, who's on our board of directors. But we're going to be modeling based on other successful programs like the Santa Fe Community College and Adobe in Action, also in Santa Fe, have these killer programs of education on Adobe construction. They're already doing it really well. So we basically just want to take a page out of their book and imitate what they're doing for how to do it right. And, you know, I'm interested, very interested in models that are going well, but I'm also very interested in models that have failed. I really believe in vicarious failing. And I also am really interested in constructive feedback because, I one of the things that's very clear about this mission that we are on is that this is not an ego project. This is something that needs to happen, needs to come into the world, and we are open for how that happens. But yeah, there will be compressed earth block manufacturing. There will be an education campus where we will start churning out cohorts of trained, skilled earthen builders to create these cool little designs that can be used as an ADU, which is an accessory dwelling unit. Like you could, if we get the zoning right, put one in your backyard for someone to, you know, have rental income or have your mom live there or you live there. It's in the backyard of your mom's house, so you can take care of her. There's all sorts of ways that these small, healthy buildings can contribute to the health of a community in non-material ways because it helps families stay together and stay healthy.
So I heard you say that there would be 10 small buildings that were living dwellings at the Institute. And so I assume in that there, those buildings would probably be for those who were attending the Institute.
Yeah. I think it probably remains to be seen who will be living in them, but at first it certainly will be builders and educators.
Great.
And we might have ways for, we'll create the infrastructure that we need to hold the classes that we're going to hold.
And so we started off, and I know that a big portion of the reason that you started Crooked Forest Institute was to create these small spaces and safe havens for as living environments for people with sensitivities. So how do we get from the point where the Institute's happening and the bricks are happening to affordable housing for those folks who are really in need and homeless, you know, like literally not able to find a home where their bodies can be well?
Right. Yeah. Really good question. So the ultimate goal is to create a model where we are doing nonprofit housing development. So we're not becoming a community development corporation ourselves, but working with a community development corporation, hopefully in Grant County or somewhere, where we can have programs. Let me tell you about one of a couple of the model organizations that we will be imitating. One of them is called Brick by Brick, Scottsdale, Arizona. It was started by Mike Lopatch, who also started Adobe in Action in Santa Fe. This is a division of the Human Resources Department of Scottsdale government, city government, and they are employing people who are unhoused to construct the bricks. They're using manual block presses. So they're 3 days a week manufacturing these bricks, employing people who are unhoused to make the bricks. They have three architectural schools in Arizona who are doing 200 square foot designs. So the next step is for people who are unhoused to be able to use these bricks to build their own house. Another Arizona organization that I find very inspiring is called Newtown CDC CLT, and that stands for Community Development Corporation Community Land Trust. They are acquiring sort of tumble-down houses in Tempe and then fixing them up and then either selling them or renting them within the community land trust. So houses that they acquire become assets of the community land trust. And what that means, community land trust is an amazing economic model that really levels the playing field for people who have experienced economic marginalization. What it means is it allows people to own a home that is on conservation land, essentially. So they don't have to pay for the land because the land is held in community. It's protected from market development. They just have to pay for the house. And the housing is intended to be affordable for generations. So they can buy it, they can own it, they can fix it, they can add a room, whatever they want. And when they sell it, they can sell it to someone else who is willing to live on a community land trust. And you can guarantee that the price that it, that the house is available for is much, much less than what market development prices are, market rates. In a community land trust, there might be an initial investment, but what you're doing, again, is this seventh generation thinking forward. You're building something. Compressed earth block and adobe houses last for centuries, okay? So we're not looking at a model that's 25 years, you know, and then you get sick. What we're looking at is something that can literally be handed down through the generations because it will still be around and in good shape. You're building it well the first time. And then the people who own it keep it up, you know, they keep it up. So it's a one-time initial investment for county or city governments, and the payout is not having to then go back 50 years later and demolish, you know, the housing that you built that nobody kept up as that is now a liability. Mm. So that's the typical trajectory of how these things go. And the community land trust is something that doesn't just help people who have been economically marginalized. It really is a vehicle for city and county and federal governments to invest in a way that keeps paying the bills and they don't have to put more money into it. It saves money in the long term. Mm-hmm. So that's another organization.
So the goal for Crooked Forest Institute is to have a community land trust.
That's right.
And then be able to provide these compressed earth blocks for folks to build their own homes on that community land trust.
Well, there's different models. So it's not that Crooked Forest Institute would actually have a community land trust, but we would be one of the stakeholders in developing this model in Grant County with other people who are aware that this is a really good idea for the, you know, for developing more housing, new housing, better housing, and for people who are falling between the cracks. You know, that what is the typical rent now in Silver City? It's like $800 to $1,000 a month.
At least just for like a one bedroom.
For a one bedroom, it's getting to the point. And I just went home to Camden, Maine, and I had a 3-unit there. I did short term and long term rentals, and my rent was usually what I charged my renters was $750 to $800 a month. Mm-hmm. It's $1,900 now for a one bedroom in Camden, Maine. I was shocked to hear that. That's happening all over the country. Definitely. And this is a very predictable outcome of the kind of economy that we have that is wealthy, you know, developers scooping up rentals and Airbnb places. So it's really limiting the housing that local people can have. So municipalities all over the country need to think about this. We need to have affordable housing for the people who live here so they can stay here, especially the young people.
And that kind of means limitations on who can buy houses. But that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, well, we should have that conversation. We need to have that conversation in Silver City. We need to have the affordable housing conversation here. Mm-hmm. So yes, for the community land trust concept, Crooked Forest, they are building straw bales. So it's natural building. We can't do straw bales for sensitive people, but they are doing natural building with earthen floors and water catchment, all the cool stuff on community land trust. And it started out as workforce housing because the people in Moab who run the cafes and, you know, help the tourists couldn't find anywhere to live. They were living in these just tumble down old trailers. And so now they are literally moving out of these ramshackle, unhealthy trailers and into 2- and 3-bedroom new houses on a community land trust and having the same payment. They are killing it. And one of the cool things about how they do this is their culture of radical inclusivity of the workforce. So they invite anybody who wants to learn how to build. And, you know, you might think of builders as being like strong, muscly dudes, but these places that have inclusive building sites, you know, they really encourage women to show up and build. And people who are transgender, people who are non-binary, people who are any color, any language. If you want to learn to build, bring it on. Like, if you got hands, we will make them muddy. Mm-hmm. This is how you develop a workforce that is bigger than you think. Like, you know, Silver City is, a municipality of about 15,000 people, I'd say.
I think it probably in surrounding areas.
Maybe Grant County's 15 and Silver City's 10.
Yeah. So with 1,000 in the last year.
Yeah, wow. So we have a lot of, and this is really having an impact on our housing here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people finding rentals, people being able to buy a house here, the prices are insane. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we really do need to talk about affordable housing in Silver City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we have a good model here. I think mm-hmm. we have some really smart ideas for how to capitalize on New Mexico's very unique history of having Adobe builders. This is one of the hubs in the whole world. Mm-hmm. Adobe in Action really holds a festival every other year mm-hmm. for earthen builders all around the world who come here from everywhere. 1/3 of the world's 8 billion people live in an earthen house. And this is something really to celebrate. New Mexico is unique in having its own earthen materials mm-hmm. building code as of 2015. All we have to do is build to that code.
I mean, it really makes so much sense that we would build with the materials that are right here mm-hmm. on the properties that we're building on. And as soon as I said the word property, I was like, I don't want to use the word property. I want to use the word land, you know, on the land that we're building on.
That's right.
And how much I want to just like speak to something that we spoke to a little bit before we started recording, which was just thinking about how in order to really consider the longevity and sustainability of our relationship with the places that we live, mm-hmm. that we need to start rethinking our systems. And in order to do that, it means rethinking the buildings that we're building. Like, where is the wood coming from that we buy the lumber to be able to build homes, mm-hmm. to build whatever we're building from Foxworth Galbraith? Thank you, Foxworth Galbraith. But like, where does that come from?
That's right.
You know, does it come from Canada? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no forests around here that are providing that lumber. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so just thinking about the ecosystem that we create in our homes and how, if we're building with the earth that is right where we are building, mm-hmm. that we're actually living in harmony with that space and like becoming localized in our physical bodies, like not just in our minds and our hands, but like our whole bodies and our microbiomes, mm-hmm. our naturalizing.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think that this is something that a lot of people really don't think that much about, but the fact that you are cultivating a microbial ecosystem in your home, it really does matter where those materials come from. You know, there have been multiple recalls of conventional building materials because they have, like, okay, drywall. Drywall is paper-faced gypsum board. Mm. Turns out the paper is often coming from places in the world that have all kinds of really gnarly spores, and those spores are in the paper already. Mm. So if your drywall gets wet even once, you are inoculating. Mm. You are cultivating a pre-inoculated paper with spores that are not likely to be in harmony with what ecosystem you have. The safest ecosystem is really in the forest. Like when you go into the forest and you pick up a handful of soil and you smell that really minerally mossy smell, mm-hmm. that is the smell of an ecosystem that is old and intact. It has not been damaged by having an infection in your ecosystem, which means a preponderance of, you know, in the soil, mold and bacteria are natural enemies. You know, every mycotoxin that a mold spore creates is an antibiotic. Mm. Penicillin was the first antibiotic that was discovered that humans started to use. But if you put any mold into a petri dish and you watch it, it creates a barrier around which it's allowing for itself to grow and propagate, but it disallows bacteria from growing. Mm. In soil, bacteria have its number. And when the ecosystem is old, these two are in check. And that's what smells good in the forest mm-hmm. soil. So if we are building, optimal health comes from building walls and environments out of that soil. Yeah, so this is what I've learned. And becoming, so the brick house that I live in is great, but these bricks are cooked. I feel better in adobes. Mm-hmm. It's like walking into a probiotic. And it's not like walking into, it is a probiotic. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had a doctor suggest that you should take soil-based microorganisms as your probiotic? That's what's in my fridge right now. And there's a reason for that. You know, mm-hmm. when you are living in a house that is literally made of soil that has an old, intact microbial ecosystem, it helps you. Mm-hmm. It helps your health. And there's lots of, I could say a lot more about this, but the other aspect of why those houses feel so good is they're grounded. You know, they're actually, you're literally touching the earth. Mm-hmm. So they feel different electrically. Mm-hmm. You feel calmer in them. Yeah. And some people really need that.
Yeah.
A lot of people really need that.
Not just those with chemical sensitivities and mold sensitivities, but yeah, those with emotional sensitivities and nervous system sensitivities.
You know, all children. Like, what we have now is a culture where it's normal to be on a screen.
Yeah.
And that is disruptive in ways that we will find out in a generation.
Mm.
But getting off the screen and being present in your environment and being connected to your environment, being engaged in the protection of your ecosystem is a particular way to live. And humanity is fast approaching an era when we need to do that. Mm-hmm. We need to do that.
You're listening to KURU 89.1. This is Interconnect, and I'm Kristen Lundgren. I'm here with Holly Noonan, and we've been talking about the Crooked Forest Institute, whose mission is to build and support those with sensitivities to have safe homes that are earthen homes that are affordable and available for those who need them. We've been chartering a lot of territory, which is awesome. I have a question for you, Holly. Usually I like to ask those who I'm interviewing what interconnection means to them and how interconnection plays a role in the work that you do.
Mm-hmm. There's multiple levels. I would say the most pertinent one is interconnection to me is a spiritual way of being. My spiritual tradition is non-duality. Mm-hmm. And the way I came to this, I was a Buddhist for several decades before I got sick, and it was really helpful to have the basic concepts of the insubstantiality of form in my mind when I got sick, and attachment, the idea of attachment, because when you get sick in a way that everything that makes you comfortable gets smacked out of your hands, it can make you crazy. It's designed to make you crazy. But Eckhart Tolle says something about how the world is not designed for your happiness. It's designed to challenge you until you become conscious. And interconnection to me is really a lived reality. Like, I have a sensitive body that makes me aware when the microbial ecosystem around me is unhappy. So that's a very particular level of sensitivity. And it allows me to really, in a three-dimensional way, my lived experience is the interpenetrating nature of reality, that the idea of self, the boundary between self and other, is really only conceptual. And that the communication between all of these living organisms in my body, on my body, in my environment, are communicating all the time in impossible to understand complex patterns. So I can feel the vibrational change of an essential oil diffuser in the room. I can feel I can feel Wi-Fi. I can feel all sorts of subtleties. I can feel a colony of mold in a house that I'm in. Mm-hmm. There are particular changes that happen in my body that are my body receiving messages that are being sent on a cellular level that other people cannot perceive. Mm-hmm. And I refuse anymore to think about this as a disability. This is absolutely a superpower.
Totally.
And so the interconnectedness is really the lack of separateness that I have come to understand spiritually, that there is a way of being in the world where if what my created sense of self, like my personality, my conditioned self, is quiet enough, there is a life force and a wisdom that can come through to have an impact on the world that is not personal. Mm-hmm. And that is the highest and best use of my mind and body. And that's how I can be of service in the world. And that's really what I'm trying to do here.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. That was a really beautiful answer. I just want to speak to Holly that, in your superhero power, one of the things that I know that Holly's done is like when we dance together, an ecstatic dance. And after dance one day, Holly was like, Kristen, I just want to tell you that, that a smell is coming off of you that is like a mold detox smell. And I had noticed actually that day that like my smell was different than normal. And then found out that week that there was mold growing under our bed.
Oh my God.
You know, like I live in a yurt and we live on, like our mattress was on the ground and I had like put a tarp there thinking that that was a good idea to keep any moisture from the ground. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the right choice. It needed to have airflow underneath the bed. I was like so attached to wanting to be on the earth, you know. But yeah, just like, you know, you helped me be like, okay, what's going on here and start investigating the situation. And so I just want to really like come back to that superhero power.
That's cool.
So thanks for
you're
that.
Welcome. Yeah. Welcome. Yeah. Good. I'm so glad.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Do you have more that you want to share about the Crooked Forest Institute and the goals that you have? I'm thinking about the vocational education mm-hmm. wing that I see here.
Mm-hmm. I'd say one of the reasons, and there are many, many reasons that I believe that this is going to unfold in a way that really helps people and takes form in the three-dimensional world. Because it's just so much common sense. But also this orientation to understanding really in our daily lives what it means to engage in activities that are life-affirming and have that be in clear contrast to what is easy and comfortable in our current economy, which often involves killing lots of things. Like our economy is, when our economy is healthy, you know, the byproduct of that is a lot of death and harm that is coming to our planet, and all of our ecosystems are getting disrupted in their stability. So the emphasis on growing and life itself, the emphasis on life itself, making choices to create buildings and education programs and microbial ecosystems that are diverse, in prioritizing diversity. Because diverse, when things are going in a trend towards diversity, and that's in the microbial ecosystem of your guts and in your food supply, like the more species you eat, the healthier you are. The more species of microbes that are in the soil that grow the food that you're going to eat contributes to your health and the health of your baby. If you are consuming animal products, if those animals have access to food that has been grown in complete soils with whole diversified ecosystems and have those ecosystems protected, all of these things are, this is an emphasis of designing a life, an entire lifestyle around the promotion of life and the diversification of life. So the more, we want more. We want more species of everything. And more in our modern lives, we need to be very conscious to arrest the habits in our life that everybody has that contribute to convenience and comfort, but at the expense of life. Mm-hmm. And increasingly that means like, I really need something, but I'm just not willing to order it from Amazon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being very mindful about where you buy your food and the actual relationships you are having. Again, this is life. Like the relationships that we have with our housemates, with our family, with our children, with our parents, this is life. when we are creating systems and homes and societies and communities that are valuing and prioritizing life. That means every member of our community can be healthier and be free from medical bills they can't pay and pharmaceuticals that have side effects, and teaching our kids that, like, this is normal, that we grow our food and then we wash it off in clean water and we eat it right out of the ground, you know? So I'd say that's one of the emphasis on the regenerative model rather than the extractive model is why I believe there is momentum in the direction of supporting the development of this vision to become reality.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that. Like, it's so essential and so clear in so many ways that it's time. You know, it's really time to start looking at the ways that we're living and looking at the conveniences that we have and the comforts that capitalism and the extractive industrial economy have provided for us that are like, is this actually supportive of life? Maybe not, you know? And then coming to the place where it's like, actually, I'm going to let go of some of those comforts in order to think about those next seven generations and make sure that there are systems in place where my children's children's children will have earthen homes that they can live in and feel safe and healthy in.
Absolutely. I think the people who are in charge of power structures right now, as they are, who are invested in maintaining and protecting the status quo as it is, will be actually quite shocked to find out how many people would be willing to opt for a smaller, healthier house that is designed for you to live outside and grow some of your own food.
Definitely.
I think people will be shocked at how many people want this. I've had quite a few people say, like, just tell me when you start building, I will drop my life and come build with you. This is something that is, for, you know, this is, it's really important to you understand that this is not theoretical for me. I have a sensitive person who's staying with me right now because she's homeless. And I would like to examine the possibility of creating a 200 square foot tiny house for her here on my land. The zoning allows for that many living dwelling units, but the zoning ordinances do not allow for tiny houses at 200 square foot and compressed earth blocks. So there are going to be some obstacles, but this young woman is not able to live in conventional housing. And she has a stable income of about $1,200 a month. How many people do we know that live on $1,200 bucks a month? Like veterans and older single people and younger people. This is not uncommon, but there is no housing that allows them to live on $400 a month housing budget. That's 30%. That's the nationally understood limit to what is affordable, is 30% of your pre-tax income.
Yeah.
If it's more than 30%, then you are living in unaffordable housing. And that is increasingly the only way that you can live now. So we need to change the systems. Yeah.
Yeah, we really do. We really do. Well, I'm so grateful for your work doing that, Holly. Thank you.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks so much for joining us. If you'd like to stay in touch, hop on over to crookedforestinstitute.org and subscribe. My name is Holly Noonan. Until next time, thank you.